Welcome to the Creative Soul Podcast. I'm your host, Leah Van Doren, and in this podcast, we explore the intersection of creativity and spirituality and discover what lights up your creative soul. Thanks for tuning in. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Creative Soul Podcast. I'm super honored to introduce our guest to you this week, Maria Brito. Maria is an award-winning New York-based contemporary art advisor, curator, and the best-selling author of How Creativity Rules the World. She is a Harvard grad, originally from Venezuela, and has been featured in many publications over the years, including the New York Times, Elle Magazine, Harper's Bazaar, Time Magazine, New York Magazine, Interview Magazine, Vogue, and more. I was so honored to connect with Maria and read her book, How Creativity Rules the World, which is all about turning your ideas into gold and dispelling myths about creativity. And what I really appreciated about this conversation is that we talk about some of those common blocks that come up when we're thinking about our creativity and how we can move through those and start putting some of our ideas into action. I was also super interested in Maria's work as an art curator because I've never met anyone who's done that. And she talks about what it's like to start to build a connection with art that you want to use to adorn your home, your life. And she just gives us some really good tips on getting started for beginners. Now, before we dive into this conversation, just some quick updates from me is that we are officially hosting the first ever Creative Soul Retreat. So I am hosting a retreat this July. It'll be July 26th through the 29th in Ann Arbor, Michigan. And it will be focused on creativity, writing, expressing yourself in nature, and learning about nature and learning about plants. So I just completed teaching my four-week class, The Poetry of Plant Magic, where we wrote poetry inspired by plants. It was such a beautiful group and such a beautiful class. If you were part of that class, thank you. I had so much fun with the students just writing poems and diving into journal prompts and really exploring our own creative expression. And I'm excited to take that a little bit further in this retreat that I'll be hosting in Michigan, where we'll be doing forest walks and wild crafting workshops and medicine making workshops. I'll teach you how to make tinctures out of plants and teas, and we'll have a bonfire under the stars and be surrounded by nature. So I'll share more in the next couple episodes too about the Creative Soul Retreat, but enrollment is open just for the month of May. So if you're interested, the enrollment closes June 1st. And there are only 6 spaces available. So if you are listening and you want to be in on the first Creative Soul Retreat, I'll leave some links in the show notes, or you can always reach out to me at Instagram. My Instagram handle is at Leah Van Doren, and I would love to have you there. So without further ado, let's dive into this episode with Maria. Hello, Maria. Thank you so much for coming on the Creative Soul Podcast.
Hi, Leah. I'm so happy to be here. And hello, everybody who's listening. And good afternoon, good evening, good morning, who knows? But thank you for being with us today.
Yeah, thank you. So I'll start off with the first question that I ask everyone when they come on. And that is, what is currently fueling your creative soul?
Well, you know, so many things, actually. I feel that creativity is endless, right? And that's the truth. And so I want to be in the here and now, getting inspiration and fuel from my surroundings. So what is, for example, right now fueling me is the fact that it's summer. So it's abundant sunlight, heat and warmth, and that sense of freedom that summer gives people that is really not necessarily available in any other season. I live in New York City, so we have very strong and very delineated four seasons. So summer is very inspiring because I also think that since there is a little bit of a slowdown it's a time to sort of like recharge and breathe and take a moment to appreciate all the things that are around us, and also to allow ideas to come, right? Because I feel that the greatest curse of honestly modern times in terms of work technology is that we are always sort of on, and that is detrimental to creativity. So I'm very excited that it's summer.
Yes, I'm so glad you mentioned that because I have also been enjoying the abundance that summer provides. You know, everything's blooming and growing, and so many fruits and vegetables that I can hardly keep up. And just this idea, too, of everything asking for our attention at all times. I think we live in this digital world and this digital age where, I mean, any moment of the day, our attention can be divided. And I know that you wrote about this in your book too, which we'll talk about and we'll get into. But this idea of creativity needs space, and creativity needs these cyclical seasons in order to flow. And so I mean, let's start off with how would someone whose attention is so divided in the modern age, how do they begin to slow down to really be able to listen and tune in to their innate creativity?
You know, I think that it's important for people to acknowledge first with themselves that they need these pockets of silence. And I would say solitude is so important as well, because when we have all these electronics that connect us to the world in different ways, whether or not some people believe that's a real connection or not, that's a whole other story. But I suggest that people start, if they can, right? Like with 5 to 10 minutes every day of silent time and alone time. And it doesn't really have to be in the morning. I mean, the mornings are always best because they set the whole day, you know, for you in a way. But it's got to be at a time where you can. And I have never met anybody who doesn't have 5 to 10 minutes, right? I mean, it's like if you have to lock yourself in a bathroom, you know, by all means, I don't think anybody's going to take you out if you spend 5 to 10 minutes of silence and solitude. And that's kind of sort of like the beginning, right? Because ideally you could progress. So many people really who are super creative spend, you know, half hour or 20 minutes in the morning, 20 minutes at night of like deep meditation. And it's sometimes it feels like a tall order, but I think the benefits are so massive and they compound over time that if people knew the peace of mind and the clarity that those moments can bring, then they would definitely schedule it like you brush your teeth every day. This is kind of like mental hygiene. And I think that because we are not necessarily trained to see things like that, we do not schedule that. And honestly, with all the conversation around mental health that we have been having lately, particularly since the pandemic hit, I think that we should stress more the idea of the silence and solitude as part of our mental health progression into a better place.
Yeah, wow. I think that like phrase is like the people who say that they don't have time to meditate are the people who need to be meditating, because it's so true that we can get caught up and swept up in the drama of our busyness and our day-to-day lives. But just taking that few moments to even take three deep breaths makes such a difference in how you move forward. And so, yeah, I wanted to talk about your book, How Creativity Rules the World, which is so lovely. And you wrote it during the pandemic,
I
right?
did. And, you know, I was obviously having the first big downtime of my adult life during the pandemic because I had been so running around with so many things, my family, my kids, my business, my husband, and never really having this long periods of time to just be. And they can be very uncomfortable, right? So, and I thought to myself, well, first, what I'm going to do is really cleanse my mind and my soul from all this debris that I think I'm carrying from so many years of not stopping. And then it occurred to me that I could use my time to write a book. And well, of course, it required discipline and focus, which I had plenty because, again, I wasn't running around. I wasn't traveling the world. I wasn't having, you know, admin issues to take care of. And, but I, you know, I really think and remember that time, and it was just very recent because it was 2020, as a very, very joyful time because I put myself into a project that I think helps people, that I think brings a perspective to the readers and whomever wants to. And I invite people to my world, but also to a world of artists and entrepreneurs and ideas from my take. And so this was a, I will always treasure the time that I was writing that book because so many people, you know, when they write, feel like it's work and suffering, and not for me.
Yeah, what was that process like for you? Because I'm so impressed that you were able to write a book in the pandemic. I think a lot of people had aspirations of like, okay, now I have all this time. I can finally write that book that I finally said I was going to do. But I mean, for myself, I had that same thought of, oh, I'm going to get so many projects done. But instead, I felt this almost like stuck paralysis where I felt like I couldn't really get stuff done. So what was that process like of writing that book for you? And also the amount of research that also went into that book was so incredible. And just all of the different artists and entrepreneurs that you mentioned throughout history, I thought was really cool and impressive. So what was that? What did that process look like for you in researching and writing the book?
Well, I had to put a lot of effort in refining an outline because I wasn't going to just sit down and write. I think that's for a particular type of writer who can just sit down and see how you put it together after. I had an outline. It, again, took me time to refine it. I have been teaching a creativity course for a while, and so I took some of the pieces of that to help me guide me through the outline, even though the content is different from, I mean, writing a book and providing an online course or an in-person course are two different animals, right? But one thing is, I said to myself, it's now or never, because I really do not have the time to do this, right? So when you put yourself on a deadline or in some sort of constraints, things are supposed to happen, right? I mean, if you can follow through, because, you know, it's the same thing when people are, let's say, funding a business and they go to investors. If an investor tells an entrepreneur, here's a blank check for whatever amount of money you want, you're probably going to squander it. It's not going to, you know, it's not going to work out, right? Like if you see yourself with unlimited resources, but if somebody says, okay, here's a check for $50,000, that you better stretch it because that's the last time you're seeing this from me, unless you give me a return, right? A profit. You are like, oh gosh, I'll better make sure that this $50,000 really fund the business right or else, right? So I put myself on a deadline. I wanted to write a chapter a week. So that was kind of my objective. And that invited the research and the writing. And so I'm glad that you mentioned the research because honestly, that was so much fun. I don't know, but for me to read about all these passages in time, starting in the Renaissance and all the way through the present, it's almost like he invited me to be with those people. So I literally was like, oh, and today's Da Vinci, right? And so I got like obsessed, and then I was sort of like watching the Medici's on Netflix because, you know, I wanted to sort of recreate the whole thing. And it gave me so much joy. And that's the word. I mean, it gave me so much joy to be immersed in this research, because when you like the subject that you're tackling, it does feel like not only are you learning, but you're also growing and you're also contributing. So that's the thing about me writing this book, is that it didn't feel forced. And I think that's good for anybody who is into any creative venture or pursuit, whether it's a book or a business or an art practice, is that it shouldn't feel like it's a chore. That is like, and honestly, for a lot of writers, they struggle, but they struggle more with being procrastinators than with actually being good writers, because once you are in front of, you know, your keyboard or whatever it is that you use to write, things sort of happen and you just gotta be present to the practice, you know, by the same thing as meditating. It's like, if you schedule it every day, you might resist it, but if you put yourself into like, this is the same thing as brushing my teeth, you're going to have to show up for it. And at some point you won't resist it anymore. So that's the thing. My process was like, I'm going to do this and I'm going to sit down every day. And I have this, you know, goal of writing a chapter a week. That doesn't mean I finished it in 25 weeks, which whatever it is, 21 chapters, because I had to go back and edit and take things out. And, you know, and so, but that was kind of my blueprint for writing a book.
It's so nice to hear someone's process and to feel that joy like radiating off of you. Cause I think you do hear these stories a lot of like, oh my God, writing a book is the hardest thing I've ever done. And it does become kind of that chore, but to feel that joy of like, no, why am I writing this book? It's because I love this work and this is the work that I want to share with others. And so I really appreciate hearing that perspective too.
Well, you know, that's what I'm saying. Like, when you are doing things that you love, it shouldn't feel like it's an upstream battle or something, right? I mean, that doesn't mean you're not going to find obstacles. That doesn't mean that there will be problems. I think that it's part of, you know, when you sign up for anything in life, you're going to find problems and you're going to have to solve them. But it was definitely one of the highlights for me of not only my life, but obviously the pandemic, to be able to do this. And I encourage anybody who has great ideas to put them out in the world. As you know, is the whole mantra of the book is how to get inspired by history and by people who've done great things, and don't expect creativity to just fall on your lap, because it typically does not happen like that. Mm-hmm. It's a very, very complex psychological, mental, and even physical process, because you've got to do things for creativity to visit. And that's the whole point.
Yeah. You talk about this in the book as well, but I want to talk about it a little bit on this podcast today of what are some of those common myths surrounding creativity? Because something that I really connected with is that we have, and I've even referred to it on this podcast this way, of like thinking of creativity as this elusive, mysterious thing, when, like you argue in your book, that is not always the case. So will you talk a little bit about what are some of those myths surrounding creativity that we can dispel?
Well, one is the one you said, that it is this sort of like muse or fairy that shows up occasionally and, you know, I don't know, waves a magic wand. And then, wow, you had that idea and it was one in a lifetime. And that is so dangerous, because what it does is takes the power away from you to really trust and rely on your own ideas, on your own creativity and creative thinking. And creativity is work. And that's the truth. It is an amalgamation of habits and skills that anyone has. The problem is that a lot of people have those skills in a way that they are a little dormant, and they don't understand that you have them and that you just have to harness the power that is inside of them. So I make the point in that part of the myths to write about people who, you know, have had a place in history. And like I talked about Picasso, for example, that everybody knows about Picasso, everybody knows his place in history. And the man, like, he was painting 1, 2, 3 canvases a day, and he was doing ceramics at the same time, and he was sketching on notebooks, and he was writing things. And this was the joy of his life, was to be in his studio working in front of his canvases and his things and having all his potteries, and because this is what he was lit with, right? Like, this is what created all this immense power that he had. And it's not that he was like on a boat. I mean, there's nothing wrong with being on a boat in the Mediterranean, like, by the way. I mean, I think most people really need, this guy was like absolutely incredible in the way he worked, which he did until like he was in his 90s when he died. But what I meant to say by that is that he got better by doing more. And that's usually what happens to people, is that you get better and you get better ideas if you are willing to put the work. And another myth is that, you know, you're either born with it or that you're not, or that you don't. And that's not also not true, because all the geneticists, all the neurosurgeon people who, you know, the doctors who are like in the study of neurological changes and things that happen in the brain have already established that there is nothing that actually grants people creativity, that every human being is creative. When they start analyzing kids and giving them tests, every child is super creative. And as they get older, they lose that, because they lose their curiosity, because, you know, educational systems around the world aren't necessarily there to foster that sense of inquiry and curiosity and joy and individuality. It's called a system for a reason, right? So I think that if people would appreciate and be more open to acknowledging that they are creative, we would have a different type of society where there will be more creators. And I don't use the word creators as in the world of social media or any of that, but more as people who can generate things. And whether that is a podcast, a book, a whole business, as big as Apple or as little as mom and pop shops, those things bring so much meaning and value to countries, societies, cities, and also whomever is doing that, right? Mm. Rather than just consuming, which is kind of the opposite of being a creator, is just being a consumer of things without necessarily either question them or use them in a different way or give them a twist. So, yeah, I mean, the mythology of creativity has been hurting people for a long time, because it is one of those things that it makes us better humans by acknowledging it and using it. And it's also something that is exclusively human, because animals are not creative. They are super smart, many of them, but they are not creative. Plants are not creative. So we have to love and appreciate this birthright of being able to utilize our ideas for betterment of the world and for our own good as well.
Oh, that like lights me up, because I so agree with everything that you're saying. And yeah, this kind of the sadness that we have, a lot of us have been raised to believe that we're not creative, or that only special people are creative, only talented people are creative, only artists are creative, when really that exists in all of us. And if we are taught to use that as a skill and kind of allow ourselves to hone and cultivate that skill, then the world would look so differently. Because really what it is taking your ideas seriously and being able to manifest those ideas out into the world, which, you know, why are we having, if you think about it kind of like from that divine perspective, if we weren't meant to act on our ideas, why would we have ideas in the first place? Why would we even have that consciousness to be able to think of all of these ideas? And I think something that people struggle with, and I know that I struggle with this as well, is kind of you know, that discipline or the devotion that is required to show up for your creativity and to show up for a project or just yourself in general. So what kind of advice would you give to people who are struggling to find that motivation or that discipline to really start to show up and cultivate that skill of creativity?
Well, listen, every day that goes by is a wasted day, right? Because honestly, you're not going to be as young as you are today. That's unfortunately, the time is passing by. And that is the one thing none of us can actually stop or slow down. And I have heard a lot of people who come to me and say, man, I wish I would have written that book because 2 weeks after or a month after I, you know, gave up on the idea, whatever, I saw that this very same person had written something so similar and it was so successful. Or, man, I wish I would have gone for the business and gotten really serious about it and raised capital or gotten that loan because it was the right time to do it. And now look at all these other people profiting and it's so saturated. So usually that kind of like lack of motivation, it's a problem that either says you're not sufficiently excited by whatever it is that you want to pursue. That's one thing. The second thing, which is usually more common, is that this lack of patience or the giving up before anything sort of gels. You know, we are in a very digital world where things happen so fast, everything lasts for 1 second. And for some reason, people have ended up believing that everything should be immediate gratification or automatic, like, oh, Amazon Prime, it arrives tomorrow. And therefore, if I have an idea, it should actually become a masterpiece the next day, or I should be, you know, winning an Oscar in my first day of acting classes. You know what I mean? So it's just not like that. I mean, we have seen incredible progress in technology that also has taken years and years to get to where it is. It's not an overnight progress, right? So people who are not motivated to pursue their things should, you know, evaluate themselves with these two ideas of, am I not really excited about what I have told myself that I want to do? Or am I just so impatient that because it didn't pay off, I'm frustrating myself. It didn't pay off immediately, right? I'm frustrating myself and sort of like taking myself out of my dreams because I'm not seeing them, you know, manifest in the way that I thought. And then, you know, people have to also believe in the power of action, because nothing happens if you don't do things. And you can have the best vibes. You can have a room full of crystals too. And, you know, this is the opposite person, right? Like the crystals and the candles and the meditation. And that's great to a certain degree, but you still are in a physical world where you require to do things and nothing happens if you don't act. So action is 100% necessary, along with a more spiritual and an internal compass of guidance and following your intuitive nudges and things like that. So for people who do not have the motivation, I think they should think about what I just said a little bit before either giving up, keep procrastinating, or doing something they don't like.
Yeah, I think that's the impatience part is really speaking to me, because I think in this digital world that we live in, we see, you know, we can consume so much art on a daily basis. And I'm really curious to hear your perspective on this idea of content creators and the art that we consume so fast paced in the digital world. And just this was something I was reflecting on a few months ago of just social media and how social media has changed the way we view art and creativity, and how like just the idea of, okay, if I scroll through Instagram and I see all these reels of people, you know, sharing these videos of this perfectly crafted recipe and the all lines up with the music, and you see that all through a TikTok, and I'm like, wow, this is amazing. It's pleasing for me to consume. But I think about the amount of work that something like that takes. And I have the question of like, it's a question of value, but it's like this idea of like, you know, what are we leaving behind? And it's not a book that you can read and will sit on the shelf for a while. It's a video that I'll view for 10 seconds and then pass on by. And I'm just curious on what you think about that and how that is changing our society. And yeah, maybe just this question of value and when it is so fast paced and consumed so easily.
Wow, there's a lot to unpack there. And obviously, you're a whole lot younger than I am. And so I appreciate that you have this thought, because I'm not sure that many people are having those insights, right? I mean, and I do have two boys, Gen Z boys, 14 and 12. They're obviously very young. And I don't think they're asking themselves these questions. Mm-hmm. Not that you are 14 or 12, but what I'm saying is that it takes a certain person to go through this questioning process, which is actually very, very important. Mm. And I think that we have to, the people who actually are most successful in life are those who are willing to move forward with the times, but who still are willing or able to look back. Right. And so I mentioned something in my book about that, about being like Janus, that was the god in the Roman god who had one side of he was double faced, and one side was looking at the future, another one was looking at the past, mm-hmm. even though the most important thing is the now, right? The present, because the past is always there as a valuable resource for you to learn about people's habits, about people's attitudes, about how they do certain things. The present is what it is. The future is for us to build, right? And so if you are able to be grounded in the present and looking also at the past, for the most part, you're going to be able to actually build a healthy future for you. But the consumption of everything, including art, is something that has definitely impacted everything, right? Like when you go to a museum, you see that people are just looking at the work of art on the wall through their phones rather than being in the present and in there and now. And again, it is all about adaptability, and it's all about, we have to make sure that we are integrated in what is happening right now. But also, if you think that there will be an advantage for you to be grounded in the person who's going to go and spend 7 hours at the museum, and you don't need to see things through your phone, then that might be something willing to explore that may give you an advantage that other people don't have. And that's also something to consider, is where are we going, you know, with the speed of these reels and the TikTok videos, and nobody can hold their attention for more than 7 seconds. Perhaps the person who can actually hold the attention for more than 7 seconds has a whole lot more to, as ammunition for themselves, for their lives, than the person who can't hold attention for 7 seconds. And what if you're the person who can do both? That'll be very interesting, right? I mean, you see the reel takes an enormous amount of time. It only lasts for 7 seconds. Only, you know, the people go see and they forget and they keep scrolling. But then what if you can do that and at the same time be fully present for things that really matter? Not that the recipes on Instagram or TikTok don't matter, they do, but the things that actually have a whole lot more of a benefit for you, and you choose which are those things and what are those things, right? And so, you know, yes, we live in very complicated times, and I just wish people would, you know, sometimes it shocks me that I post a picture on my Instagram of, you know, an artist who's famous, but is not as famous as Picasso, you know, let's say. And people are like, wow, this is so cool. Who made this? And I mean, not everybody has to know, but there is a separation and a lag between how we are used to consuming information right now and what it used to be before all these things existed, where people actually were reading books and looking for things and physically going to museums. That's the other thing that has become sort of a challenge. Like, oh, should I really go to the museum if I am able to see it everything on TikTok or on Instagram? Or, you know, do I really go and have to see how this canvas was finished or how this sculpture? I don't think there is no augmented reality substitute for seeing these things in person and for feeling the energy that they transmit. I'm always in awe to think that I am in front of something that is 500 years or in the many different stories that thing carries within, which I find absolutely fascinating. The moment in time when things were made and what was happening and what was happening in that country or in that village or the mind of the artist, the amount of people that have crossed, you know, that. Yes, definitely. A million views on a video is a great thing. But if you think about the amount of people who have crossed the Mona Lisa at the Louvre, that's kind of funny. You know, like it's like a ridiculous number. If like you think a million views versus the amount of people who have stood in front of the Mona Lisa in the past 400 years, right? So I think it's an excellent question, Leia. And I think that people who are able to have both and negotiate what it is important for them at any given time are the ones who are going to succeed the most.
Yeah. I so appreciate you sharing that. Cause I think on one hand, we are living in this day and age where art is the most accessible maybe that it's ever been. And people who want to make a living off of their art and creativity is probably the most it's ever been. So on one hand, while that's a great privilege and blessing, I think I get very like caught up in, or in just the complexities of that, because yeah, what do I want to be creating? And that is that inner self inquiry. And if for me, I have to answer that for myself and, you know, do I want to be sitting there spending hours making a video on my phone? No, because that doesn't fill me up, but maybe that fills someone else up. And maybe what I should be focusing on is, you know, what really is calling my soul. So it comes back to that self inquiry and just, yeah, listening to those creative intuitions and urges and just trusting that will lead you where it's meant to lead you.
That's the way to do it. And you've said something very important. You've got to be honest with yourself.
Yeah.
You know, because like if you don't really want to spend 1 hour editing a video or shooting or whatever, then you shouldn't.
Yeah.
There are other ways to market what you do that do not require 1 hour editing, for sure.
Totally. Yeah. I'm so curious actually to hear about your work as an art curator, because I have never met anyone who does that. And yeah, I just want to hear a little bit about why you got into that, what lights you up about that, and a little bit behind the scenes of what that even looks like for people who have never been let into that process.
Well, so there are two things that I do as a curator. One is curating private collections for private clients or institutions. And so these people hired me and they say, I want to build an art collection. And either I don't know anything about the art market, or I have had something and I just want to create more meaning around that. Mm-hmm. What that means is very individual, right? People sometimes are interested in supporting emerging artists. People sometimes are interested in building a blue chip art collection with things that are historical and mean something to them. But that my job is to really, first of all, protect my clients from buying things that don't have any value or that don't fit their lives or their visions, right? Because sometimes people get into hypes that are just that, hypes. Like the neighbor said and the other said, and I am keeping up with the Joneses. And so that is one of the things that I do, is protecting my clients from, you know, doing things that are not really what they want to do. Mm-hmm. And the second thing is to build this sort of like narrative about what they have and how those pieces talk to each other, right? And so a lot of people gravitate towards, let's say, artists of color. A lot of people are more interested in having a certain amount of abstract works with like little bit of figuration. So I'm the person who brings this aesthetic to them and help them display the work and help them. You know, it's a lot about being a creative director in their homes. So that's one of the things I do. And the second thing as a curator is that museums and galleries also hire me to put together exhibitions in their spaces. And so that is fun job. It's very similar in the sense that there is a cohesiveness, a narrative dialogue that must exist, even if it's just one artist or if it is a group show of a variety of artists. There's got to be a concept and there's got to be an idea behind it. And the job of that type of curatorial projects is a lot of like being an editor. You just have to really make sure that you're choosing the best and that you're choosing the best that actually fits the story that you want to tell with the works. And that's very cool and it's very satisfying because, again, like I feel that it's very important to make art, as you said, available, democratic, not just in prices, because that's a different story, but more like the accessibility of the public, of the viewers, that they can walk in and see things and hopefully read the statement and understand why this work is being shown in this way. What is the curator wanting to tell me? And what are the artists wanting to tell me? And that's also the beauty of this, is that interpretations for art are as varied as whomever is in front of a piece of art, right? Because what I see is not the same as you see, no matter how much mediation, captions, notes, labels, statements, right? I mean, there is a guideline for you, but you can see and think whatever it is that fits your idea. And so that's very cool because it means that we can coexist with this art in all this many different perspectives. And it's still okay. And it's the same piece of art. And it just widens the horizons, in my opinion. So what I do is to really widen all these horizons and help people appreciate aesthetics, beauty, but also the ideas. The ideas are, you know, crucial for me. It's not just art for the sake of art. It's not just, it's beautiful. Is like there is so much more that an artist wants to tell people with a piece of art that is not just this is beautiful. There is a whole lot more. And that I think is fascinating.
Yeah, I love that it comes back to really storytelling. So no matter if you're, you know, selecting art for people's homes or a gallery, it's all about that story and what narrative is it presenting and what ideas behind the art. And I love, yeah, I think that's so cool. And it's something that I haven't really given a lot of thought to because as probably a millennial, I feel like I don't, and maybe it's like an age thing or a generational thing, but yeah, I wasn't taught to, you know, have art in my homes or have a beautiful piece of art, but it's something to really think about as, you know, allowing beautiful things to adorn your home and what's the story behind all of that. And so, yeah, curious how you got into that. Is that something that you always wanted to do? I know in the book you talk about being a lawyer and kind of coming out of that, but yeah, what led you down that path?
Yes, you know, it's like you said very well, I was a lawyer in New York City for many years and I loathed the whole thing. I hated it. And I had this really deep passion for art history. And later, for as I was more in New York living longer, I got more into contemporary art because contemporary art can feel very snobbish and it also could be sometimes incomprehensible because a lot of contemporary art has to do with conceptual art, which is not what I do. But, you know, so as I lived longer in New York and I realized that there were painters and sculptors that, you know, used the same type of materials and sometimes techniques as my heroes from the Renaissance or my heroes from the Impressionists, then I was like, oh, this is very cool. And then I got more into the ideas of why people do what they do, which is kind of also part of the book. Is I was kind of like a person who went after all these artists to ask them about their ideas because I wanted to know how they got to them. Because I was like, wow, if I could understand how he does that, maybe I can incorporate that in my life too. Even though I'm not an artist, I do things differently, but I just think that the overarching theme is what matters. So I quit my job as an attorney after I had been buying art for my own self and my own house for a bit. So this was maybe like what? It was like my 9th year living in New York. And I was like, you know, I hate this and I'm going just to follow my bliss. And I'm going to open a business where I'm going to help people curate art and collect art because I already have some idea. I mean, honestly, I did not know much. I knew a bit, but I didn't know everything. And I think nobody ever does, but it was just that moment in my life where I bet on myself, where I bet on the power of my ideas. And I saw that there was a gap in the marketplace where a lot of people who were doing what I do did not have like a further interest in educating audiences, for example, or they didn't want to be on social media. It was very, back when I started in 2009, the only social media platforms were Facebook and Twitter, like the real, you know, like where people really would spend time. And it was also the beginning of blogging and things like that. So I was just very curious about how to serve the needs of someone like me, right? Like, so if I was already knew so much about art history and had studied art history and had traveled the world going to all these museums, but still felt intimidated by contemporary art, wow, what would it be for those who haven't had the chance to see all these museums? And so I thought that was a perfect opportunity to marry my desire of learning for myself, but also teaching and sharing. I think that has been a very important theme in my life, is like sharing my knowledge and sharing what I know. And hopefully it'll be one person who's interested too, right? And then building communities around that. So that was, in a nutshell, the story. It was that I saw this opportunity to do something that other people were not doing, that besides having the business itself, I wanted to expand my knowledge and touch other people with it. And I'm very grateful to say that it worked and it continues to work because, you know, like you said, I think people need to consume, if they are consuming things online, at least they should have a little bit more meat around just the image or the video. And it should really stay with them and help them. Even if they forget, right? Like, but help them process the now, the world through art. And that's, I think, very important.
That's so cool. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. Yeah. It makes me think, because I don't know too much. And I know we've talked about social media a little bit and like this digital world. And it makes me think about NFTs. Mm-hmm. And I don't know too much about NFTs. I feel like I know just a basic person knows about NFTs. But yeah, curious to hear your perspective on NFTs and how that might be changing the art world. Or yeah, what's your perspective on that?
I think NFTs, what is interesting about NFTs is that it gives the artists a lot of power to go to the world and monetize digital imagery. And that's fine. It's hard to say if it's going to change the art world, because humans like to have things that are tangible, and this has not changed. The art of collecting art is 600 years old, right? And so just because somebody throws a JPEG, it's not going to change people wanting to have canvases on their walls. I still need a house. I can't live on the metaverse, because as much as I would like to just be so light to live inside of a computer, I still need to have, you know, a house made of brick and mortar and, you know, things like that. Yeah. So what NFTs actually have done is they have also opened up a new possibility for artists to monetize their work. And for people who are very into this decentralized model of, because if you think about it, it makes sense that if you support Bitcoin or Ethereum as a decentralized currency, it makes sense to have decentralized art too. So you don't have to owe anything to a gallery and you don't have to split your profits. So it totally, as an evolution of the thought, it makes a lot of sense, right? And I think that it is a revolutionary moment for artists who are into that type of medium. And by all means, people who want to hype things up and build community, that's the other thing. People have to get this idea that NFTs are not just about putting a JPEG and a monkey, and like, it's about building community. And people build communities because you have a position of leadership and you know that the people around your community like what you have to offer. So it's a whole lot more than just putting something out there and praying to God that somebody's going to pay something for it. It's more like an idea, a concept, like, you know, World of Women build this community around putting illustrations, digital illustrations of diverse women, Black, and some are, you know, Asian, and some are Caucasian, and like, so, and they are all different, right? And so, but it was more about this idea of like, there is an empowering idea behind why this artist, this collective of World of Women is putting this art out in the world. Rather than, as I said before, just throw something. And so that's what artists have to have in mind when they want to get into the world of NFTs, because it's not just as easy as just putting something out there and somebody's going to come and pay you $1 million in crypto. But it's definitely revolutionary. It is absolutely, I'm not discarding that it will have a stronghold in the world of art, but it's not going to take away physical tangible options and objects, right? At least, and people get old and they want to have things. So when you're young, it's okay. You live in the metaverse, but then you're old and then you have to pay your bills. And then, you know, so, and then you want to have a house and then you want to hang something on the walls. So it's an incredible moment, especially for people who are creating things, and they should be, you know, explored profoundly and deeply. And, but also, you know, beware of hypes. I always, anybody in anything should always be very careful with these things because, you know, it can go wrong. Just saying.
You never know. Oh, yeah. Thank you. I think that for some reason, the word like digital renaissance came to me. And I wonder if we're in that moment. And I guess only time will tell to see where that goes. But that's kind of the exciting part of it. Yeah, I'm curious to hear, who are some of your favorite artists?
Oh, no, that's like asking me who is my favorite child. The thing is, let me tell you, the problem is that there is a new group of young artists every, you know, month.
Yeah.
Popping up, right? And they are so good. And this is also, it has a direct relationship to what you were talking about earlier, that artists nowadays have access to things on their phone and they don't really need to be anywhere. And so it's very easy for them to absorb this information and then us to reprocess it in their own ways and put it out there. And what that does is that it creates an enormous amount of amazing artists. I mean, the truth is, if I were to tell you, well, they are all so crappy, no, is that they are amazing. And so the challenge is, how do you choose? And is what you're choosing, and I speak because I have a job where I have to respond to my clients, right? Is it what I'm telling them to buy will be around the artist as an artist for the next 60 years, or is that person going to give up when the market gets soft? Because mm-hmm. it usually gets soft for everybody. There is nothing as an upward trend that is just keeps going up and up and up for nothing. Not in the stock or NFTs or art or real estate. There are always corrections. People go through phases, seasons. You know, there are summers and winters. And so I can't say my favorite artist. I mean, I would honestly, when that question was asked to me maybe 10 years ago, I would have like 10 contemporary artists. Now, sometimes I just want to talk about the past and say, well, and then I said Picasso and I said, you know, I don't know, Frida Kahlo, things like that. Because even though it's not 100% true, I just feel that it's just very difficult because I would be leaving so many things outside. Mm-hmm. I just feel that it's a very important time for women artists. It's a very important time for artists of color, because since our history was mostly written by white male folks, and nothing wrong with them, by the way, I'm not an extremist, but what I'm saying is that since art history has had that specific way of filtering information, you know, contemporary times try to overcompensate for that, right? I said, like, oh, there is guilt, let's say, you know, guilt that emanates from gallery owners and from museum directors, that they want to make right the wrongs of history. And there is also an appetite from these collectors, because for so long they only had things that sort of fit a very specific aesthetic that comes from a very specific artist. So then they are like, oh, but there is a whole world of artists who are so different, who can see things from a different perspective. And that's really the point of living with artists. As I said before, is an invitation to have perspective, to be a better person, to see the world differently, to feel that you're a part of a cultural moment that was not the same as your parents, right? Or as your grandparents.
I love that. Thank you. Yeah, for sharing that. Because I think that, yeah, we are in such a unique time in history. And just to acknowledge where we're at, I mean, yeah, what you said before was sticking with me, of this idea of looking to the past, and although we're in the present and that's only the thing that matters, but we're also building the future. So how are we incorporating past, present, and future, and honoring those in the ways that they deserve to be honored and deserve not to be honored, in whatever way that looks like.
You're right.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm curious, just as we're wrapping up, and this might be a longer answer, but for someone who doesn't own any art and wants to start a journey of starting to collect art, what do you say, where should they start? What would that look like in the beginning?
I think that if whatever city you live, try to show up to the local galleries, right? And so I'm almost 100% sure that even in the small towns, then there is a town next door that has galleries, and sort of like go and ask questions and get an interest for who are also the local artists that are being supported by that gallery or they're being shown. And that's just like, just for your own education. You don't have to buy anything yet. You just want to know a little bit, right? And then the artist, research the gallery, see what comes up. Google is there for you. You don't have to make any rushed or impassionate decisions of like, let me just buy this thing. Although you could, but you know, if you do want to have a little bit more of power, because knowledge is always power, then, you know, you should be doing a little bit more research. Now, there is another way that I particularly love and favor, that it is the whole world of art fairs. And art fairs have this particularity that you can see 100 galleries under one roof in 2 hours and go from one booth to the next. And that not only gives you an opportunity to evaluate what you like, because that's at the end of the day, it's what you like, but also what is out there, right? I mean, so this is a very important question for you, is like, well, I like this because I noticed that I stopped and admired a female figure or a geometric composition or something that was totally blurry and abstract or a piece of photograph that was hanging on the wall. So then you start understanding who you are in terms of what are the things that you're gravitating towards and do they really match who I am, right? I guess that's the other thing. And maybe you don't get an immediate answer about that because, you know, art is a feeling and it's an aesthetic experience. So it may not necessarily match who you are right there and then, but, you know, there are always reasons why you like what you like. And as you gravitate this, or as you walk around these art fairs, you know, take notes, ask questions, ask for prices, ask, you know, and like, ask the right, like, how old is this artist? And is this artist collected in any museum, or, you know, where is this artist located? I mean, those questions are important to form your knowledge, not it's you're doing yourself a disservice. You're just going to go with, like, you know, a phone, take pictures and run out. And there is a whole also world of online marketplaces for artists and for consumers, obviously. There is Artsy and there is ArtNet. And for example, ArtNet holds auctions online, Artsy too, but they also sell. And there is ArtSpace that sells a lot of prints and, you know, younger artists and things like that. There's another one called Platform. So then you have a whole other host of options where you don't even have to leave your house. It doesn't really matter where you are because it's just through a computer. So I think that the first step for anybody should be really like getting an education before jumping and saying, I'm just going to go and buy things, and having a criteria and, you know, starting small. I think that, like, it's important to just, like, you know, say, well, this is my limit. I only have this amount of money to spend, and let me just buy one thing. And when I have money again, I'll buy another one. And that's typically how things happen, you know. It's just like, okay, well, I started with this thing and then I have this thing. And so, but, you know, take your time, don't rush, and you don't have to get into crazy hypes if you are not really convinced.
That's such great advice. That's like, gets my gears turning as I'm beginning to think about, you know, where you would start to research all of this and just get excited and just get to know certain artists and kind of start to follow their work. So that's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Maria. This has been so amazing. And we'll definitely leave the link to your book, How Creativity Rules the World, in the show notes, which is such a good, like, creativity manual for seriously any person that is wanting to tap into their creativity a bit more and work through some of those blocks and those myths and really start to take their ideas seriously. And I think the tagline is turning your ideas into gold.
Yes.
But yeah, just that idea of, like, yeah, your ideas can open up so many new worlds and possibilities. And I'm really sitting with that feeling that if we all did that, how much more beautiful the world would look, and hopefully how much happier and peaceful we would be if we're really honoring everyone's creativity in their own way, and think of all the value that we all could get from that. So that's what I'm really sitting with. So thank you, Maria.
And wow, I love it, Leah. It's amazing. And I am so thankful for this invitation. And I'm also so thankful that you read the book and that it left you with, like, this sensation that this is within your reach, that you can do it, that you can, you know, be happy with your creativity, make money out of it, and serve others, right? Because at the end of the day, that's the greatest satisfaction, is how we serve people with our own gifts. And it doesn't have to be saving children in Africa, because so many people are confused about what purpose is, right? I mean, as long as you're breathing and doing something you love and you're serving others, you have purpose and meaning.
So true. Thank you. Where can people find you if they want to learn more about you, your work, all of that?
Well, my website is mariabrito.com. That's BRITO.com. And there are links to all my social media, you know, platforms, and there is a form if you want to email, and there is a pop-up for my newsletter that is free and comes out every Tuesday. And that's the best place to find me.
Amazing. We'll put all that in the show notes. Thank you, Maria.
Thank you, Leah.
I hope you enjoyed that episode, and thank you so much for listening. If you like this episode, please feel free to share it with a friend and tell them what inspired you. Or if you'd be so kind, you can rate and review the podcast. And when you do, I would love to gift you my free guided writing meditation that will connect you to your creativity, yourself, and your spirituality. Just go on over to my Instagram at Leah Van Doren. That's LeyaVanDoren, and send me a screenshot of your review, and I will send over the meditation, and I would love to hear your thoughts. Stay inspired, stay creative, and keep shining your creative soul.